This is the MyHeart.net podcast. This show is produced by Dr. Philip Johnson in conjunction with VitalEngine.com. Please welcome your host, Dr. Alain Bouchard, a cardiology specialist of Birmingham, Alabama, at St. Vincent's Medical Center, part of Ascension.
Welcome to MyHeart.net series on primary prevention. Today we'll be discussing controlling hypertension for a healthy heart. What are the strategies and treatment options? This is an excerpt from our primary prevention series with Dr. Martha Gulati, Director of Preventive Cardiology at Cedars-Sinai.
Now let's talk about the blood pressure and who do we treat. So hypertension, you know, accounts for more cardiovascular death than any other risk factors. And the prevalence of blood pressure greater than 130 over 80 in the U.S. is ginormous. It's about 46% or over 105 million. It's higher in blacks and it increases dramatically with age. So we can see how it has this significant impact treating the blood pressure. So what are the new blood pressure thresholds that we have in the guidelines now, Martha? And what's the evidence that we have that it really works?
Yeah, so now we've defined normal. Normal blood pressure is with the top number, which is known as systolic, being under 120 millimeters of mercury, and the diastolic being under 80 millimeters of mercury. So that's how you're normal. Otherwise, you're not normal anymore. And that was a big change for us. Elevated blood pressure. So we used to have this term pre-hypertension, and we've moved away from it because we really think that that was giving a wrong information to patients. So elevated blood pressure is people with a systolic, the top number 120 to 129, and a diastolic still under 80. So if you fall in that, it's elevated. And we can talk about what the indications are about treating with at those numbers. But hypertension is now when you're above 130 systolic, and if you're above 80 millimeters of mercury on the diastolic blood pressure. And we have two stages. We have stage one and stage two. Stage two is when it's above or equal to 140 systolic and above 90 diastolic. So we used to, I think a lot of people thought those last numbers was the number for the diagnosis of hypertension, but we've really shifted it down. And there's different treatment implications based on whether you are high risk for cardiovascular disease or whether you already have cardiovascular disease in terms of what our goal setting should be for you. And I, again, you might want to ask me about that, but you know, for everyone who has hypertension or for everyone that we want to prevent hypertension, regardless, we should be talking about what are the other things you can do to preserve cardiovascular health and reduce your risk of developing hypertension? Because like you said, it's so common and it is the number one really right now in terms of risk factors present in our society. Hypertension is the most important one. And yet the one that we can treat so effectively, but sadly we do the least good at. Just in general, and I'm not blaming the patients, I'm actually blaming the medical community. We are really bad, first of all, at checking blood pressure. We're bad at following up on it. We're bad at using our tools in clinic or at home properly. It's just a pet peeve of mine that we just don't, something that should be so simple. And if you think about it, when we were in medical school, or at least when I was in medical school, blood pressure, how do you measure it? It was this, you threw it on your classmate, you showed that you could inflate the cuff, and you were, could you hear the sound? Okay, good, you know how to take blood pressure. Nothing else was taught to me. It was only when I was in practice, when I finished fellowship, that I actually truly learned how to take blood pressure, because I had the honor of working with actually nephrologists, and what my first boss was Henry Black and George Backris, and they were like really anal about how you check blood pressure, and our whole clinic was built around checking blood pressure and having the proper desks and sitting patients nicely and We used ambulatory blood pressure cuffs like nobody else. And I learned there what it, how important it was to take blood pressure right and to follow up on it. But I think that that's really something we lack, and it should be, we should really do a better job. I know patients may not care about that, but I just tell you, you know, there's so much to simple things that we can do for you that we don't do.
Certainly, you know, treating blood pressure really makes a big difference. I mean, you know, we can go to the blood pressure trialist, you know, this meta-analysis, 11 trials, over 64,000 patients. You lower the blood pressure, you decrease cardiac event by 15% in each of the ASCVD groups. I mean, it's really unbelievable. So how do we do that? I mean, obviously, there's some non-pharmacological, you know, ways, and there are some medication maybe we could address. Let's get started with the non-pharmacological, because these are very, very powerful ways of lowering pressure.
Yeah, I think that those are probably as important as any medication. And I know that not all of them will be present in one individual. So, you know, if you might say, well, I don't have this one, but you might have some of them. So, or things that you can do. So if you need to lose weight, and not everyone needs to lose weight, you don't have to be overweight to have hypertension. I just tell you that I take care of a lot of runners because I'm a runner myself. And then they all get surprised when they hit a certain age, they have hypertension and they're like, but I run every day. I'm like, okay, but that's just how our bodies are, and we just have to treat it. But if you have some extra weight on you, we know that for every kilogram of weight loss, you can reduce your systolic blood pressure by about 1 millimeter of mercury. So if you need a motivation to lose weight, let me tell you, there should be a motivation, because you can actually reduce your systolic blood pressure pretty effectively. Also, if you don't follow that healthy of a diet plan, you know, the DASH diet, which is, you know, a lot of people think the DASH diet was low sodium. It actually really wasn't. It was a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy products, reduction in your saturated and total fat intake, but that was it. That's what the DASH diet was. And that healthy diet was really powerful and showed that it could reduce systolic blood pressure in somebody who had hypertension by about 11 millimeters of mercury, but even in somebody who's normotensive, you could reduce your blood pressure by about 3 millimeters of mercury. So that's still pretty powerful. And we want to preserve normal blood pressure. So that's why I'm telling you what would happen to somebody who doesn't even have hypertension. Now, if you added to the DASH diet the reduction in sodium or salt intake, so if your sodium intake was to about 1500 milligrams a day or less, that would reduce your systolic blood pressure by 5 or 6 millimeters of mercury in somebody who had hypertension, and about 2 to 3 millimeters of mercury in somebody who was normotensive. And then if you raised your potassium intake, so if that's the only thing you said you could do, that you like certain foods that are rich in potassium, fine, great. If you can increase it to about 500 milligrams a day, that will lower your systolic blood pressure by about 4 to 5 millimeters of mercury in somebody who already has hypertension, and about 2 millimeters of mercury in somebody who has normal blood pressure. So I hope you're seeing, like, you can add up all these different things depending on what you can do. It doesn't have to be done on day one. You can try with, you know, one thing at a time. Maybe start the DASH diet, then say, can I lower my sodium intake? Can I increase my potassium intake in another month? You can see what a powerful effect these things can have. Now, if you also add into this physical activity, particularly aerobic activity, can reduce your systolic blood pressure by about 5 to 8 millimeters of mercury in somebody who has normal blood pressure, somebody who is hypertensive, and about 2 to 4 millimeters in somebody with normal blood pressure. And then if you add in, like, you know, some resistance training, that can also further lower your blood pressure by about 4 to 5 millimeters of mercury in somebody who has hypertension, and actually 2 to 4 millimeters in somebody who is normotensive as well, that can be reduced. And another thing, I know people like us to say as cardiologists that, you know, you can drink alcohol, but if you have hypertension and you want a really easy way of lowering your blood pressure, is try to reduce your alcohol intake, because alcohol consumption actually raises your blood pressure. And by getting rid of alcohol, your blood pressure in somebody who's hypertensive, it reduces about by 4 millimeters of mercury. And by somebody who doesn't have hypertension, it can reduce your blood pressure by about 3 millimeters of mercury. So all of these lifestyle changes are pretty impactful from a hypertensive standpoint, but also for somebody who has normal blood pressure. And I always show this. I actually have a nice table of this in my office because I like people to feel empowered, because actually most people, like we already talked about, hate being on medications. And I'm like, okay, which of these can we do? And which ones are you willing to do? And let's follow the impact of them. It can be very empowering. I've had patients who have sometimes tackled all of them because they really hated the idea of being on medications. So they would do many of these things that they could do in their life, and we would see dramatic falls in blood pressure. So medication is certainly one part of our treatment arm, but not the only part, nor should it ever be. I really don't, even with somebody who I clearly say, yeah, you need to be on medication, it doesn't come without the lifestyle lecture. Which of these things can we do? Because it is very empowering to know you can control. There's a lot of things we can't control in life, but blood pressure is actually one of them that you have some control over. Or maybe you don't like medications at the higher doses, so maybe we can get you on a lower dose of a medication than something that you maybe you have side effects to when we're at the higher doses.
I think that's such a good point, Martha. There's a study we did, a multi-center study with renal denervation. And the study was positive, which was one of the few that was positive. And the average lowering of blood pressure was 3 millimeters of mercury. And here you're talking about these weight loss and healthy diet, sodium restriction and potassium-rich diet that lower blood pressures by 4 to 5 to even 10 millimeters of mercury. I mean, this is an incredible, impact and very, very significant. Now, there are some patients with hypertension that are at higher risk, and these are the ones that you want to start medication probably earlier. What are those patients, Martha?
Well, certainly the people that need hard to ignore the need for medication is people who already have cardiovascular disease. I mean, if they already have cardiovascular disease or, heart attack or prior stroke, there's little room. And they're also the people that when we classified this new stage one hypertension, that we want to get their blood pressure actually lower. And we have a lower threshold for starting medications too. Doesn't mean, again, to ignore these other things, that strategies that they can do, but we want to make sure we're treating them. And then of course, people with chronic kidney disease is another group that we don't want to ignore. Diabetics, these are those higher risk people that we were already talking about. And then also people who have a 10-year ASCVD risk score that's above 10%. That's again our high risk for cardiovascular disease, even if they don't even have an event. They're the ones that we've got to keep their blood pressure lower. So if they're, if they're in the elevated blood pressure, I may just talk about lifestyle, but if they're already at stage one, we would add to those, all those lifestyle things, we would add medications. And with our new guidelines, we've also pointed out the fact that the majority of patients, really, it's ineffective to just use one medication alone for them. And we often will need two medications, and we shouldn't be so scared. I think this is more a recommendation for doctors to not be so scared to use two medications up front. Because if we can use maybe a lower dose of two, we might get, the patients might better able to tolerate those medications in combination rather than a single dose, higher dose pill that they may not tolerate as well. So I think it's changed our community to treat people differently, but also hopefully have helped patients be more compliant with medications. Because I think from a patient's perspective, you know, none of us like side effects. You know, and some of them are really make you not want to use the medication. And so if we can find what's right for you, I think the other thing for patients to know is that, yes, blood pressure medications may have side effects, but we have so many medications now that we can find for you one that doesn't affect you or your quality of life. So don't give up if you've been on one medication and you decided on your own to stop it because of the side effect. Don't ever do that. Blood pressure medication needs to be taken, but you must tell your doctor about the side effects you're having because they can change it and give you a medication that would work for you. And sometimes it's trial and error. I'll just be honest. There's certain patients I can give them the first drug and they have no problem. And then you can be like my father and have every side effect until we find the right one. And, you know, and you learn, us as physicians, we learn, we don't have a magic genetic test to say, oh, on this patient, they're going to get leg swelling, or this patient's going to get a cough, but we're getting closer and closer. And one day we will be able to just take a little bit of your blood and be able to know what's the right medication for you. But right now you've got to let us do some trial and error, but always tell your doctor about what side effects you're having so that, because don't assume you have to live with those side effects. We have so many drugs out there that we can try on you and try to minimize, and strategies that we can use to help you get on the right medication.
I had just a patient last month actually that had stage 2 hypertension, 140, you know, over 80, and I started her, she was already on something, and I gave her another medication, and also we talked about the diet, and, you know, she said, I really could do without the meat, and of course, her husband looked at me funny, that was, I said, well, you know, why don't we try that, and she went vegan, and a month later, I had to stop the medication that I had started, just because of now her blood pressure, she was feeling a little bit lightheaded, and this in the blood pressure, she was registering blood pressures of 95 and 100, you know, systolic. And I came off my medication just because of the lifestyle that what she did. So, I mean, it's obviously
your favorite thing. Isn't that the favorite thing to happen? I love when patients really like just, you know, go all in and they change it, and so much so that you have to stop things you started. It makes me so happy. I'm so excited when that does happen, or yeah. Even reducing medications. It makes me happy.
Yeah, but very good point. I think patients with chronic kidney disease, patients with diabetes, and probably patients with a high calcium score, you know, greater than 100, if they're in that risk profile of, you know, 5 to 15%, you know, I think we should kind of start them early, you know, or maybe, or intensify, you know, their treatment.
This conclude our hypertension for prevention of heart disease. Next chapter will be lowering your cholesterol.
To learn more from our team of cardiologists, please visit us at myheart.net. You can also follow us on social media by searching myheart.net on Facebook and Twitter. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss our next episode.